Can I welcome everyone this afternoon to this session of Bristol Radical History Week. And sorry for the delay, but those people who were there yesterday will know that we are relatively timeless, the themes that we're covering. So the first session this afternoon is from Peter Linebaugh, The Incomplete, True, Authentic and Wonderful History of May Day, where Peter will lay out joining the joint strands of the red and the green. So, as I just said, we're going to be timeless. So we'll let Peter talk and then questions at the end. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Hello to the people watching the streaming thing, too.
It's not working, Kevin.
So it's just us, then.
But there's also eternity.
But there's the audio, can't we? No.
Well, we'll have it. I don't know.
I've got it.
Is this occasion of sadness for you guys?
It may still work. I'll carry on.
All right.
This is working.
That's working.
That's
too.
Working.
Yeah. So I was going to speak about May Day and its incomplete, true, and authentic, wonderful history. To quote the title of this pamphlet that I put together in 1985, 23 years ago. And it's gone through different versions. It's about the red and the green. That's how it started up. It's back before the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc fell apart. But the different green ecological movements had already begun. So I was trying to think of both of them in relationship to May Day. I think there's a couple stories out of it that I'd like to tell you. And then I'd like to tell you how it's what I've been thinking about since and how it can help us. And whether how it's related to the subject matter that the people in Bristol have invited us, I think from many parts of the world, to come and talk about. That is the commons. So let's say half an hour to make this presentation. Because George, Massimo, Dave, Steve, at least, I'm very interested in hearing what they have to say on this subject. Not of the red and the green so much, but for particularly May Day, but of what are the problems of the commons? Because I think perhaps all of us come out recently of a movement since maybe in the last 10 years where people were interested in reclaiming the commons. And that led us to think, what is the commons? And then we're still maintaining this discussion, even while privatization is taking place around us. We're maintaining it here in Bristol, despite the endless war of terror. That's why our numbers are few. I'm not saying that other people have been terrified, but I'm reminding myself, really. Okay. Another version of this pamphlet appeared It began being called the Silent Speak. And it had to do, back in the 70s in North America, much of our working class tradition, or people's tradition, had been lost. So we didn't know what May Day was, and we had to remind ourselves. And in fact, the people who reminded us were people who had not forgotten. And they were in Mexico, in Central America. And they would refer to us to, I don't speak Spanish, so forgive my pronunciation. They would speak of los martiri. They would speak of the martyrs. And I wasn't sure what that meant. But they spoke to me as if I should know what it meant. And of course, as you know, because you did not suffer under this form of silencing that we suffered in the States, you know that you had already arrived at the time when that silence of May Day became more powerful than the voices that were strangled in Chicago in 1887. The scholars amongst you will recognize that I've just quoted the last and dying words of August Spies, who was hanged in Chicago as one of the Haymarket martyrs. Haymarket being a place where the farmers of the American Midwest I have to be very careful with my words here. I would say the farmers of the Midwest had harvested the natural resources of the black earth of the Midwest. That's the way we were taught, as if the wealth came from a natural resources. Back in school, back in the 50s, we were taught, oh, the Ukraine has its black earth, and the American Midwest, the Great Prairies, have its black earth. Because eons ago, the forests had been cut down, and through geological time, God had made available great rich resources of the Midwest. So I have to be careful not to use words that would suggest that. Because the wealth of those of the North American plains is a human wealth that had come from centuries, if not millennia, of indigenous management. So when the farmers of the Midwest bring in their hay to Chicago to help the horses, who at this time they didn't have cars in Chicago, traffic was by horses, or it's beginning to be by rails. The market is a place of meeting, similar to the market, perhaps to Stokes Croft. I don't know the history of marketing near Stokes Croft. Or the market in Istanbul, where comrades met day before yesterday to remember Los Martiri of Haymarket. It's a worldwide remembrance, this May Day. And though we in the United States have trouble remembering it, because of the silencing, the repression, others in the world remind us. August Spies, Albert Parsons, Sam Fielding. I should mention Sam Fielden. Good-natured Sam was from Lancashire. He was a Methodist preacher. He also suffered. He was one among those who suffered on November 7th, I think, 1887, hanged by the neck. Because at Haymarket, a police riot occurred. Sam actually was speaking at Haymarket on top of bales of hay late in the evening when a stick of dynamite was thrown. The stick of dynamite, remember, Alfred Nobel had invented dynamite just a few years earlier for the purposes of blowing up the earth. For pillaring the earth, pillaging the earth for silver and gold. The great, yeah, that's Nobel, Alfred Nobel. But this stick of dynamite was thrown and all hell broke loose. It was worse than the Red Scare of 1919. It was worse than the McCarthy period of the 1950s in America. There was no, it was similar to what happened after 9/11, 2001. People were locked up. Anarchists, communists, whoever the sheriffs did not like, all over the United States. This put an end. This was a very severe repression. So that's one story I wanted to tell you. They had assembled at Haymarket because the iron workers who worked at McCormick's Reaper. McCormick had developed the mechanical reaper, which would harvest the grasses of the plains by machine. Well, the engineers, the machine workers, went on strike and led a strike for the second of on May Day, 1886. Two of them were killed, and so the movement in Chicago met to defend them in this strike. That's when they had that evening meeting with Haymarket. That's when the stick of dynamite was thrown. That's when seven were arrested, and then were, or millions, hundreds were arrested, actually thousands. So that's one story that I think it's really incumbent, you know, I feel we must retell again, you know, on May Day. We must go over the story. But the way I went over, have gone over the story in, at this time was with, you know, going back to that earth. Because people from Canada had come to Chicago. You know Lucy Parsons because she's part Native American, part African American, and was married to Albert Parsons. Albert Parsons lost his life, and he went sober, by the way. They wanted to get him drunk to make sure he'd go peacefully, but he said he didn't want to. He went sober, and Lucy spoke of the reasons why he was hanged right until the 1930s. Albert Parsons had belonged to the Confederacy. The Confederacy was the armed power of the slave masters during the American Civil War. And Albert Parsons was quite a military man for this slave power. But he learned, and he changed his mind in Texas, became a typographer, became an abolitionist, married a person of color, joined a workers' movement. George Rawick used to tell us this story, and he always emphasized that Parsons was fought in the Confederacy because he wanted to teach, George wanted to teach us that people can change and that people do change. And so I think this is something also to remember on May Day in our fixed positions, you know, that we can grow and change according to the struggle around us. So there's for Albert and Lucy and August Spies. The Métis Rebellion was in another part of the Great Plains, in Saskatchewan and Alberta. And many of these Métis Indians had come to Chicago and were part. So this I learned, you know, when I begin to investigate the workers' movement, but I see it's also indigenous people. I think we often forget that the indigenous people of North America are also part of the working class. I was telling George, if I've never heard of Jack Wilson, but we've all heard of the Ghost Dance because it led to Wounded Knee in 1892. And that was started by Wovoka, a Kwiwi Indian from Nevada, from Reno, Nevada, what's now Reno. He was before he had his visions of the restoration of the land, and before he led people into a dance, the ghost dance, which is just, he called it the dance of friendship of the Indian race. And we can do it. We just hold hands in mourning and move 1/2 inch together. And that moving of 1/2 inch together so frightened the United States of America that they had to massacre hundreds of women and children at Wounded Knee because the ghost dance was spreading. This is also a power from Haymarket. It's also a power for us to remember. Wovoka had been, as a boy, he'd worked on a ranch. He was part of the industrialization of cattle production, of protein and meat production. You know, so there's, you know, there's, I'm saying we have to be very careful and like reject the primitivism that often will come to a mind like mine that has been colonized, you know, frankly, by white racist, genocidal Hollywood films. You know, I don't even know about my own indigenous past. My grandfather was Choctaw. But my father and his family wanted to hide it in order to protect, in order to pass as white. Do you follow? But we all have this. It's all, but I don't need, we don't need to stress that. I think that's, you know, that's available to us all, isn't it? That we come from many sources. I think in America we have to, or people like me have to say it, because so much of the income back in the 70s and 80s depended on being able to establish certain kinds of roots. So there's a tie between your, you know, like DNA and what kind of grants you could get. I mean, there was, so that's a whole other political thing. So that's the Haymarket story. It's, of course, yeah. There's another story that I wanted to tell you about that really led to this pamphlet. And it's a story of English people leaving, I don't know whether they left Bristol, this would be a very good question for us to find out, for Massachusetts in 1625. I wanted to tell you about Thomas Morton, who sailed from England, and they took their bearings when they got to Quincy Bay in Massachusetts from a very tall red cedar tree. And Thomas Morton settled and near this, and he called it Marymount. And the land seemed a paradise to him. And he wrote that the fowls are in abundance, the fish in multitudes, and I discovered besides millions of turtle doves on the green boughs, which sat pecking of the full, ripe, pleasant grapes that were supported by the lusty trees, whose fruitful load did cause the arms to bend. And on May Day, 1627, he and his Indian friends, stirred by the sound of drums, erected a maypole 80 feet high, decorated it with garlands, wrapped it in ribbons, and nailed to its top the antlers of a buck. And later they wrote that they set up the maypole on the festival day of Philip and James, and they brewed a barrel of excellent beer. A Ganymede, a gay person who serves drinks, sang a bacchanalian song, and Morton attached to the pole the first lyric verses that were ever penned in America in English, which concluded with the proclamation that the 1st of May at Marymount shall be kept a holy day. So we have like the rainbow, here's the Rainbow Coalition. It's multicultural, it's pleasure-loving, it's accepting the friendship and returning friendship with the indigenous peoples, and this is the first May Day that we know about in North America. But the Puritans up in Plymouth, they called the maypole an idol, and they named Mount Marymount Mount Dagon, after the god of the first ocean-going imperialist, the Phoenicians. They sent an army, and they destroyed the scum of all the country, to use Governor Bradford's words. This is Nathaniel Hawthorne and others have found in this drama of Marymount an alternative path which the peoples of North America could take. Could have taken, I was about to say. What tense is that? It's not past pluperfect. What is that? Could have taken? I forget this grammar. It's horrible, isn't it? Us historians should have it down. Because I want to be able to say it as if the story's not over. You see what I mean? I want to say as if that story is still available for us. I don't want to say that it was destroyed, it was defeated. It's still available. So its ending is not yet completed. It seemed like it's been silent for a few centuries, but perhaps part of it can come back. Miles Standish, another one of these Puritans, called Morton Mr. Shrimp, and the maypole was cut down. I'm not going to talk much more about it. Yesterday we had a good talk about Isaac Newton, and I do want to say that Isaac Newton went and cut down the maypole in London and used it to support his telescope. Seems like that should mean something. But I'll just leave it. He was the gravitationist man, right? He was the machinist of all of the time, the theorist of the new types of machines. He's the one anyway, wanted to apply the same laws to the cosmos and to apples. That's the way I look at it. Because I'm interested in law. And this guy messed it up. So that's the second story that I wanted to tell you about May Day. This Thomas Morton and Marymount. Every part of the world has its own story with May Day. And I think it's good to remember it. And to have battles over it. I lost a job in Rochester, New York, because we had a great picnic on May Day, and the anarchists and Marxists wanted to have a dust-up. They have a few beers. These are guys, and they wanted to shed some blood. And so they did, and I lost my job, not because I was part of it, but because I helped to organize this party, and I failed to intervene to prevent it from happening. And so I lost my job at the University of Rochester. It's a fact, Dave. It was strange. But there was, so May Day has this power. I think, you know, there is a redness. The red of blood is on May Day, as well as the green of the boughs that I spoke. You know, it's a time of struggle. So I don't want to, you know, just paint a pretty picture of dancing around the maypole. But there's a struggle to it, and every country has its, you know, the workers of the world. We have our relationship to it, and I don't think we should forget it. Of course, I'm not calling for tanks to roll down outside the Kremlin walls. That's the way May Day was celebrated as I grew up. Unless it was in kindergarten, with the little children, when we were taught to go around the maypole. Do you still do that in Bristol? Did you all grow up with a maypole? Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did? Yeah. Lovely, lovely.
Elm.
And Elm?
Basically, Elm, that's an oak tree as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think we must preserve this. This was the red and the green. And I wanted to say something else about red. It was Thomas Jefferson who He's the principal Indian killer. He was anticipated the time when the history of the Indians would terminate, to quote him. He was the one who identified the indigenous people of North America as red or savage. He connected redness with savagery and connected it also with commoning. So I want to end with this theme that for Thomas Jefferson, for us recently, the importance of indigeneity is an importance of another relationship to property. Another kind of relationship to property. We might say communism, we might say commons. Perhaps this is a discussion I know we're going to have later. But it's a different relationship to the productive resources and to gender relations. Perhaps most important. That's the importance that indigeneity has meant. One of its, in North America, one of them anyway. And so Thomas Jefferson, at the founding of the United States of America, or the USA, the KKK USA, has been this linkage of the two meanings of red. But will struggle, communism or commons, and indigeneity. And this was accomplished. These, you know, into the visual imagination, into the perceptions. There's almost a physiological side to it that remains very powerful. So, I told you about Freight Train Harmon starting to throw a punch at Sanford Elwitt back at the picnic. Before the picnic concluded, Marty Glaberman, who you might know as Mr. Toad from Detroit, sat down and penned a poem. And I'm going to read the poem for you as a way of concluding. All right? The 8-hour day is not enough. We are thinking of more and better stuff. So here's our prayer and here's our plan. We want what we want and we'll take what we can. Down with wars, both small and large, except for the ones where we're in charge. Those are the wars of class against class, where we get a chance to kick some ass. For air to breathe and water to drink, and no more poison from the kitchen sink. For land that's green and life that's saved, and less of the earth that's paved. No more women who are less than free, or men who cannot learn to see their power steals their humanity and makes us all less than we can be. For teachers who learn and students who teach, and schools that are kept beyond the reach of provosts and deans and chancellors and such, and Xerox and Kodak and Shell and Royal Dutch. And end to shops that are dark and dingy. And end to bosses, whether good or stingy. And end to work that produces junk. And end to junk that produces work. And an end to all in charge, the jerks. For all who dance and sing loud cheers, to the prophets of doom we send some cheers. To our friends and lovers we give free beers. And all who are here a day without fears. So on this first of May, we all should say, let's take it easy, but let's take it.
Peter, who do you blame for losing your job, the Marxists or the anarchists?
I had a bit of a problem myself at the time. I've stopped drinking since then. The drinking would get me into blaming games and getting into fights where I wouldn't feel a pain, but didn't know what I was fighting and didn't know who I was hurting. So that event, you know, helped me. Sanford Elwitt, the Marxist, he wrote a good book about some French trade unionists, and he's passed on to the happy hunting grounds. The other, Freight Train, the anarchist, he's mainly a homeboy. Like, he's from Chicago, and he remembered and he taught me to remember. And so I learned a lot from him, and I've lost track of him. I think he didn't put the plug in the jug. Yeah, that's what happened. So it's not good for me to get into the too much of the blaming there. You know, then I'll really be into it. I've got to stay away from that. But Steve here, he's got a presentation for us that I'm very interested in hearing, and I think it's the next one on the program. Shall we have a break before then, or are there other questions?
Let's have a break.
Yeah. Oh, there's a question. Good.
How do our struggles today that are explored on May Day, or struggles that have been, associated with May Day over the last 100 years, how does that relate back to May Day, like in pagan terms or in terms of like ancient festivals? Do you know anything like that?
Yeah, you know, you'll hear on the radio now, like I heard some tosh on the radio yesterday, going on about different customs, you know, in Sweden and Finland and Ireland and Scotland, you know, different fires or different gifts or different flowers to bring to loved ones. So I feel there's a discourse of folkloric, you know, how cute, that we should preserve. But we have to say what it means. And what it means is that this earth is not, this land that we have, that we live on, is to remind us of celebration. You know, there's a lot of anthropology that used to investigate all of this in order to establish a huge distance from, quote, paganism. I'm thinking of J.G. Frazier and back in the early 20th century. They would collect it all. You know, oh, how interesting, the Paiute or Kwiwi Indians, in their ghost dance, they also have a pole, you know, that they do their dance around. Oh, and how cute, they have that at, you know, Shepton-on-Surrey or whatever, and, you know, in England, and they have a bit of it in Finland. But it's to remind us, really, of, what we want. And for me, it reminds me of a time without commodity trade, without money. It reminds me also, I think, of our biological nature. It reminds me also of my sexual nature, or what used to be my sexual nature. you know, in the pre-Viagra years. But that's a thing of pleasure and joy for us. I think you read those earlier anthropologists, they always say it has to do with fertility, reproduction. But we don't, that problem is not, so it reminds us of subsistence. How are we going to subsist? It reminds me of that. And that problem of subsistence is a problem that is raised all around the planet, you know, on the themes that that we're going to hear about from Massimo and George and Dave. That is, what is commoning? How, where do we get our subsistence from? You know, why do we have to spend, as they used to say in the States a few years ago, why is our oil under their soil? You know. Who do things belong to? This is, so it's a big anti-privatization.
First time I went to the States was about 8 years ago, and I went to Boston, and I happened across a May Day demonstration, which was included the official organisations of the Labour movement, which I felt was quite normal coming from here. But the people I spoke to locally said, for them it was a big shock that they were pinching themselves, that, because they said normally a May Day demonstration was the anarchists and the Marxists, and the official Labour organisations had Labour Day And so I was wondering, how's that kind of played out in the popular consciousness of people? The idea, what's the meaning of Labour Day? And is there a tension between the two, between May Day and Labour Day, and how's that played out?
The answer to your question is a resounding yes, and thank you for that question. The first thing the United States had to do, at the time of Wounded Knee, really, was to say, even though the rest of the world had made May Day the day for the 8-hour day and to remember the martyrs of Haymarket, the United States government said, oh, we're going to push May Day, or Labor Day, to September. So that's the first thing they wanted to do. And then so the Labor Day is the 1st of September. And May Day is something for the commies. So it's as a Cold War thing, an anti-working class thing. I think that's the first thing to say. Then, I didn't really say a couple important things. Like last year, the year before last, there was a huge demos across the United States on May Day by immigrant workers, Spanish-speaking workers. So they're bringing back now not, you know, an esoteric knowledge of a few Marxists or anarchists or left-wingers or... but a huge numbers of people. And they said, si se puede, yes, we can obtain a justice if we enter the streets in our tens of thousands, which they did in Los Angeles. For the labor movement, the official organizations, if by that you meant traditional trade unions, they also have been rediscovering May Day. And I would, you know, I think the Boston story is one where we might know something because we, like, helped in that transition. Where the old May Day that the speaker behind you was referring to, of pagan days, it caused trade unionists and others to think about, well, what's May Day have to do with us? And, you know, we've been part of that story. And how we're going to, you know, bring in the pagan fertility, the 8-hour day, the immigrant worker as a force is up to us, and it remains to be seen. But, you know, we're trying. And we can't do it without, like, worldwide help. Thank you. That's wonderful to hear that question because it's kind of, partly the Soviet Union had to fall. In other words, the trade unionists had made a deal after World War II, as you doubtless know, you know, that their survival depended upon being anti-communists. And yeah.
I think what's tended to happen here on May Day is that there have been sort of quite big demonstrations. I mean, 1999, 2000, 2001, there was lots of Reclaim the Streets demonstrations, and there were maypoles up in Parliament Square, several thousand people on the streets. And to use a metaphor, it's almost been a bit like hacking. It's exploited a sort of a situation. They found a loophole, had massive kind of resistance rallies. And then the state has kind of responded by clamping down on that. So it's almost kind of raised issues about protests, and then the state has kind of responded with Section 60s and injunctions, and then it's all kind of died down again. So over the last few years, there hasn't really been much happening. So, and it's a bit like hacking. You sort of exploit a loophole, or people who hack exploit a loophole, and then... what that does is identify weaknesses for the multinationals to kind of clamp down again. And I suppose what you're saying in terms of picking up on what you're saying is about things reinvent. What May Day needs to do is people kind of think outside of the box, and then they'll kind of reinvent something else, and May Day will kind of carry on for another generation, hopefully.
Thanks, yeah. Hopefully. There wasn't a question in there.
Well, just, I don't know, just a point about May Day has to reinvent itself because it doesn't seem to... I mean, I don't know what... I mean, obviously in other countries it's probably a bit more... there's been a bit more continuity. I mean, I know in Germany still it's huge, yeah. Probably in France it's huge. But I think in Britain it hasn't really sustained itself as a kind of annual event.
Yeah,
I don't think it's on the radar for a lot of people, May Day, to be honest.
Right, right.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately, did you say?
Unfortunately, no. I think whether that's a deliberate media
suppression. Well, it has to do with our organisation, doesn't it? Or it has to do with
possibly,
the movement,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. I mean, there are still big trade union, big trade union rallies. They're not actually, what was it, probably about a couple of thousand last year, I don't know. It's not really a force to be reckoned with at the moment.
Yeah.
The
actual date's been different as well, though.
Establishment
always makes sounds about moving the May Day bank holiday back to somewhere like October or something like that. Remember at Trafalgar or something. Whether that will ever happen.
So maybe one or two more questions and we can. Did you have a question?
Well, there's. One's a question, one's maybe an observation. I'm from London, and a couple of years ago, I was involved with the anarchist organisation of a May Day demonstration in London. We decided not to hold a separate demonstration because we just didn't have the resources of people to organise it. But it was at a small meeting, maybe a bit like today, and the state surveillance of it was completely overt. Everyone going into the meeting, photographed, it was clear intimidation. No, months beforehand, the state wanted to clamp down on us, intimidate people. That's the one point. So obviously the state does fear people taking onto the streets, which they have no control over. The other story is about, talking about the America where it has Labour Day. I think there's a trend in this country of neoliberalism and the Labour Party that now is pretty signed up to the free market, that they actually want to write May Day out of no history totally. And we'll have something like St George's Day, where Gordon Brown's trying to claim Britishness and British imperialism, I guess. And they want to have St George's Day, take it away from May Day.
St George's Day, who's Palestinian?
but that is the case. There is a move to get rid of May Day. And even the organised trade union movement in Britain doesn't fully get behind it. Some unions will, some shop stewards will, but most of the trade union movement so cooperated with the Labour Party that they've dropped all sort of forms and sort of no workers' rights anymore.
Okay, well, we got the fight, don't we? But I think we'll have to make May Day into something we want. But again, I say, if they do take St. George's Day, we'll have to look into St. George. And as I say, he is from Palestine, or he's born in Palestine, not far from Ramallah, number one. And then I think he had his episode with the lizard in North Africa. So I think there's plenty of grounds for interest in St. George. It's at 1722 he became... 1222. It's right after the Charter of the Forest was discovered.
And you can also see this, that you're now actually having St. George's Day demonstration, not demonstration, events.
Yeah.
Which is now, this only happened in the last couple of years. Prior to then, it was unheard of, far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
Never heard about St. George's Day events. There's a clear cultural intervention here by the state and the powers that be. Actually change our political consciousness.
Well, back to a certain kind of established religion, huh? I don't think we want that. I mean, why? This is monotheism and the centralized state is something I don't think we can have. We can't make much progress with either of them. This is why the paganism that you mentioned in the back is so essential to us. You know, we have many, many gods, many deities. And personally, I tend to be on the atheist side, mostly. Except in times of extreme danger. You know, then I look for the spirit among my comrades. No, there were these angels at Seattle in 1999. You know, incredible angels who came from I don't know where. You know, in the midst of the terrors and the demonstration, who could succor those who were injured. The beautiful experiences. A divine intervention, I thought, from our
from our resources, from us. Who would have known? So I don't like this hagiography or sainthood that the state wants to lay on us. But we have, you know, those of our own who we remember. Like in North America, we remember Brad Will in Oaxaca. Or we remember Rachel Corrie in Palestine. Or we remember... It's my age, I'm sorry.
George.
What?
Linder.
Ben Linder. Tried to bring water. But those are some of our saints, our martyrs. Okay. Anything? Oh, Dave, you had a question.
Oh, well, I had like one sort of observation and one of those stupid. The observation was that I think it's really, I remember reading that in the 16th century, I mean, in the sort of beginning of the enclosure movement, it was interesting that there were, you know, enclosure riots and there were, you know, all sorts of resistance against enclosure, but in so far as the two sort of sides, the engrossing landlords, the proto-bourgeoisie, sort of lined up in political battles against common people, it was partly in defense of commons, but just as often it was in defense of popular festivals, because the same guys who were engrossing the fields were the Puritans who condemned holidays like May Day specifically because they said they were pagan. So it was actually very much the same struggle and completely overlapping, which I think is interesting to take into consideration. So it did not seem insignificant. That was exactly the period, too, when like Robin Hood dances got added to May Day ceremonies. There were convergence between the two even then. The question I had, though, was dumb and irrelevant, but how did May Day become a word for help?
From Swiss, French.
Oh.
It's from the 1920s for the Red Cross. I think in French, May Day. You know, please give me some aid.
Oh!
Oh, great. Oh, great. I feel I've earned my plane ticket.